incinerated, almost burned to a crisp. I passed on the bacon and eggs and just took a muffin. My mother poured Mr. Fisher a tall glass of grapefruit juice. "Fresh squeezed, courtesy of your eldest," she said. He took it, a little suspiciously. I couldn't blame him. The only person who had ever squeezed juice for Mr. Fisher was Susanna. But Mr. Fisher rebounded quickly. He shoveled a forkful of eggs into his mouth and said, "Listen, thanks again for coming to help, Laurel. I really appreciate it." He looked at us kids, smiling. "These guys weren't too keen on listening to what I had to say. I'm glad to have a little backup." My mother smiled back at him just as pleasantly. "Oh, I'm not here to back you up, Adam. I'm here to back up Beck's boys." His smile faded. He put down his fork. "Lore, you can't sell this house, Adam. You know that. It means too much to the kids. It would be a mistake." My mother was calm, matter of fact. Mr. Fisher looked at Conrad and Jeremiah and then back at my mother. "I've already made up my mind, Laurel. Don't make me out to be the bad guy here." Taking a breath, my mother said, "I'm not making you out to be anything. I'm just trying to help you." Us kids sat absolutely still as we waited for Mr. Fisher to speak. He was struggling to stay calm, but his face was turning red.
"I appreciate that. But I've made up my mind. The house is for sale. And frankly, Laurel, you don't get a vote in this. I'm sorry. I know Sue's always made you feel like this house was part yours, but it's not."
I almost gasped. My eyes darted back to my mother, and I saw that she, too, was turning red.
"Oh, I know that," she said. "This house is pure Beck. It's always been Beck. This was her favorite place. That's why the boys should have it."
Mr. Fisher stood up and pushed out his chair.
"I'm not going to argue about this with you, Laurel."
"Adam, sit down," my mother said.
"No, I don't think I will."
My mother's eyes were almost glowing.
"I said, sit down, Adam."
He gaped at her. We all did.
Then she said, "Kids, get out."
Conrad opened his mouth to argue, but he thought better of it, especially when he saw the look on my mother's face and his dad sit back down. As for me, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. We all hustled out of the kitchen and sat at the top of the stairs, straining to hear. We didn't have to wait long. Mr. Fisher said,
"What the hell, Laurel? Did you really think you could railroad me into changing my mind? Excuse me, but fuck you."
I clapped my hand over my mouth, and Conrad's eyes were shining, and he was shaking his head in admiration. Jeremiah, though, he looked like he might cry. I reached out and grabbed his hand and gave it a squeeze. When he tried to pull away, I held on tighter.
This house meant everything to Beck.
Can't you get past your own grief and see what it means to the boys? They need this. They need this. I don't want to believe that you're this cruel, Adam. He didn't answer her.
This house is hers.
It's not yours.
Don't make me stop you, Adam, because I will. I'll do everything in my power to keep this house for Beck's boys.
Mr. Fisher said,
What will you do, Lore?
And he sounded so tired.
I'll do what I have to do.
His voice was muffled when he said,
She's everywhere here. She's everywhere.
He might have been crying. I almost felt sorry for him. I guess my mother did too, because her voice was nearly gentle when she said, I know. But Adam, you were a sorry excuse for a husband. But she loved you. She really did. She took you back. I tried to talk her out of it. God knows I tried. But she wouldn't listen. Because when she sets her mind on someone, that's it. And she set her mind on you, Adam. Earn that. Prove me wrong. He said something I couldn't quite hear. And then my mother said,
"You do this one last thing for her. Okay?"
I looked over at Conrad, and he said in a low voice, to no one in particular,
"Laurel is amazing."
I'd never heard anyone describe my mom that way, especially not Conrad. I'd never thought of her as amazing. But in that moment, she was. She truly was. I said, "Yeah, she is." So was Susanna. He looked at me for a minute, and then he got up and went to his room without waiting to hear what else Mr. Fisher said. He didn't need to. My mother had won. She had done it. A little while later, when it seemed safe, Jeremiah and I went back downstairs. My mother and Mr. Fisher were drinking coffee the way grown-ups do. His eyes were red-rimmed, but hers were the clear eyes of a victor. When he saw us, he said,
"Where's Conrad?"
How many times had I heard Mr. Fisher say, "Where's Conrad?" Hundreds. Millions.
"He's upstairs," Jeremiah said. "Go get him, will you, Jer?"
Jeremiah hesitated, and then he looked at my mother, who nodded. He bounded up the stairs, and a few minutes later, Conrad was with him. Conrad's face was guarded, cautious.
"I'll make you a deal,"
Mr. Fisher said. This was the old Mr. Fisher, power broker, negotiator. He loved to make deals. He used to offer trades to us kids, like he'd drive us to the go-kart track if we swept the sand out of the garage, or he'd take the boys fishing if they cleaned out all the tackle boxes. Warily, Conrad said,
"What do you want? My trust fund?"
Mr. Fisher's jaw tightened.
"No. I want you back at school tomorrow. I want you to finish your exams. If you do that, the house is yours. Yours and Jeremiah's."
Jeremiah whooped loudly. "Yes!" he shouted. He reached over and enveloped Mr. Fisher in a guy hug, and Mr. Fisher clapped him on the back.
"What's the catch?"
Conrad asked.
"No catch. But you have to make at least C's. No D's or F's."
Mr. Fisher had always prided himself on driving the hard bargain.
"Do we have a deal?"
Conrad hesitated. I knew right away what was wrong. Conrad didn't want to owe his dad anything, even though this was what he wanted, even though it was why he had come here. He didn't want to take anything from his dad.
"I haven't studied,"
he said.
"I might not pass."
He was testing him. Conrad had never not passed. He'd never gotten anything below a B, and even B's were rare.
"Then no deal,"
Mr. Fisher said.
"Those are the terms."
Urgently, Jeremiah said,
"Con, just say yes, man. We'll help you study, won't we, Belly?"
Conrad looked at me, and I looked at my mother. "Can I, Mom?" My mother nodded.
"You can stay, but you have to be home tomorrow."
"Take the deal," I told Conrad.
"All right,"
he said at last.
"Shake on it like a man, then,"
Mr. Fisher said, holding out his hand. Reluctantly, Conrad extended his arm and they shook. My mother caught my eye and she mouthed, "Shake on it like a man," and I knew she was thinking how sexist Mr. Fisher was, but it didn't matter. We had won.
"Thanks, Dad," Jeremiah said, "really, thanks."
He hugged his dad again, and Mr. Fisher hugged him back, saying,
"I need to get back to the city."
Then he nodded at me.
"Thanks for helping Conrad, Belly."
I said, "You're welcome," but I didn't know what I was saying "you're welcome" for, because I hadn't really done anything. My mother had helped Conrad more in half an hour than I had in all my time of knowing him. After Mr. Fisher left, my mother got up and started rinsing dishes. I joined her and loaded them into the dishwasher. I rested my head on her shoulder for a second. I said, "Thank you."
"You're welcome."
"You were a real badass, Mom."
"Don't cuss,"
she said, the corners of her mouth turning up. You're one to talk. Then we washed the dishes in silence, and my mother had that sad look on her face, and I knew she was thinking of Susanna. And I wished there was something I could say to take that look away, but sometimes there just weren't words. The three of us walked her to the car. You boys will get her home tomorrow? She asked, throwing her bag onto the passenger seat. Definitely, Jeremiah said. Then Conrad said, Laurel. He hesitated.
You're coming back, aren't you?
My mother turned to him, surprised. She was touched.
You want an old lady like me around? She asked.
Sure, I'll be back whenever you'll have me.
When?
He asked. He looked so young, so vulnerable, my heart ached a little. I guessed my mother was feeling the same way because she reached out and touched his cheek. My mother was not a cheek-touching kind of person. It just wasn't her way. But it was Susanna's. Before the summer's over. And I'll come back to close the house up, too. My mother got into the car then. She waved at us as she backed down the driveway, her sunglasses on, the window down. See you soon, she called out. Jeremiah waved and Conrad said, see you soon. My mother told me once that when Conrad was very young, he called her his Laura.
Where is my Laura?
He'd say, wandering around looking for her. She said he followed her everywhere. He'd even follow her into the bathroom. He called her his girlfriend, and he would bring her sand crabs and seashells from the ocean, and he would lay them at her feet. When she told me about it, I thought, what I wouldn't give to have Conrad Fisher call me his girlfriend and bring me shells. I'm sure he doesn't remember, she'd said, smiling faintly. Why don't you ask him if he does? I'd said. I loved hearing stories about when Conrad was little. I loved to tease him, because the opportunity to tease Conrad came up so rarely. She'd said, no, that would embarrass him. And I'd said, so what? Isn't that the point? And she'd said, Conrad is sensitive. He has a lot of pride. Let him have that. The way she said that, I could tell that she really got him. Understood him in a way that I didn't. I was jealous of that. Of both of them. What was I like? I'd asked. You? You were my baby. But what was I like? I persisted. You used to chase after the boys. It was so cute the way you'd follow them around, trying to impress them. My mother laughed. They used to get you to dance around and do tricks. Like a puppy. I frowned at the thought. She'd waved me off. Oh, you were fine. You just like to be included. Chapter 37 Jeremiah.
The day Laurel came, the house was a wreck and I was in my boxers ironing my white button-down. I was already late for senior banquet and I was in a foul mood. My mom had barely said two words all day, and even Nona couldn't get her to talk. I was supposed to pick up Mara, and she hated it when I was late. She'd get all pissy, and she'd sit and sulk for about as long as I'd made her wait. I'd put down the iron for a second so I could turn the shirt over, and I ended up burning the back of my arm. Shit! I yelled. It really freaking hurt. That was when Laurel showed up. She walked through the front door and saw me standing in the living room in my boxers, holding the back of my arm. Run some cold water over it, she told me. I ran to the kitchen and held my arm under the faucet for a few minutes, and when I came back, she had finished the shirt and gotten started on my khakis. Do you wear yours with a crease down the front? She asked me.
Sure, I said. What are you doing here, Laurel?
It's a Tuesday. Laurel usually came on weekends and stayed in the guest room. I just came to check on things, she said, running the iron down the front of the pants. I had a free afternoon. My mom's asleep already, I told her.
With the new medicine she's taking, she sleeps all the time.
That's good, Laurel said.
And what about you?
Why are you getting all dressed up?
I sat down on the couch and put my socks on. I've got senior banquet tonight, I told her.
Laurel handed me my shirt and pants. What time does it start?
I glanced at the grandfather clock in the foyer.
10 minutes ago, I said, stepping into my pants.
You'd better get going.
Thanks for ironing my clothes, I said. I was grabbing my keys when I heard my mom call my name from her bedroom.
I turned toward her doorway, and Laurel said,
Just go to your banquet, Jer. I've got it covered.
I hesitated.
Are you sure?
1,000%.
Beat it.
I sped all the way to Mara's house. She came out as soon as I pulled into her driveway. She was wearing that red dress I liked, and she looked nice. And I was about to tell her so, but then she said, You're late.
I shut my mouth.
Mara didn't speak to me for the rest of the night. Not even when we won cutest couple. She didn't feel like going to Patan's party afterward, and neither did I. The whole time we were out, I was thinking about my mom and feeling guilty for being gone so long. When we got to Mara's house, she didn't get out right away, which was her signal that she wanted to talk. I shut off the engine.
So, what's up? Are you still mad at me for being late, Mar?
She looked pained.
I just want to know if we're going to stay together. Can you just tell me what you want to do, and then we'll do it?
Honestly, I can't really think about this kind of stuff right now.
I know.
I'm sorry. But if I was going to have to say whether or not I think we'll be together when we're at school in the fall, long distance, I hesitated, and then I just said it. I would probably say no.
Mara started crying, and I felt like a real piece of shit. I should have just lied.
That's what I thought, she said. Then she kissed me on the cheek and ran out of the car and into her house.
So that's how we broke up.
If I'm going to be completely honest, I'll admit that it was a relief not to have to think about Mara anymore. The only person I had room in my head for was my mom. When I got home, my mom and Laurel were still up playing cards and listening to music. For the first time in days, I heard my mom laugh. Laurel didn't leave the next day. She stayed all week. At the time, I didn't wonder about her job or all the other stuff she had going on at home. I was just grateful to have an adult around.
Chapter 38. The three of us walked back to the house. The sun was hot on my back, and I thought about how nice it would be to lay out on the beach for a while, to sleep the afternoon away, and wake up tan. But there wasn't any time for that, not when we needed to get Conrad ready for his midterms by tomorrow. When we got inside, Conrad fell onto the couch and Jeremiah sprawled out on the floor.
So tired,
he moaned. What my mother did for us, for me, was a gift. Now it was my turn to give one back. Get up, I said. Neither of them moved. Conrad's eyes were closed. So I threw a pillow at Conrad and jabbed Jeremiah in the stomach with my foot. We have to start studying, you lazy bums. Now get up. Conrad opened his eyes.
I'm too tired to study. I need to take a power nap first.
Me too,
Jeremiah said. Crossing my arms, I glared at them and said, I'm tired too, you know. But look at the clock. It's already 1. We're gonna have to work all night and leave really early tomorrow morning. Shrugging, Conrad said,
I work best under pressure.
But
seriously, Belly, I can't work like this. Just let me sleep for an hour.
Jeremiah was already falling asleep. I sighed. I couldn't fight the both of them. Fine, 1 hour, but that's it.
I stalked into the kitchen and poured myself a Coke. I was tempted to take a nap, too, but that would be setting the wrong example. While they slept, I kicked the plan into gear. I got Conrad's books out of the car, brought his laptop downstairs, and set up the kitchen like a study room. I plugged in lamps, stacked books and binders according to subject, put out pens and paper. Last, I brewed a big pot of coffee, and even though I didn't drink coffee, I knew mine was good, because I brewed a pot for my mother every morning. Then I took Jeremiah's car and drove to McDonald's to pick up cheeseburgers. They loved McDonald's cheeseburgers. They used to have cheeseburger eating contests, and they'd stack them up like pancakes. Sometimes they let me play, too. One time, I won. I ate 9 cheeseburgers. I let them sleep an extra half hour, but only because it took me that long to get things set up. Then I filled up Susanna's spray bottle, the one she'd used to water her more delicate plants. I sprayed Conrad first, right in the eyes.
"Hey,"
he said, waking up right away. He wiped his face with the bottom of his t-shirt, and I gave him another spray, just because. "Rise and shine," I sang. Then I walked over to Jeremiah and sprayed him, too. He didn't wake up, though. He had always been impossible to wake up. He could sleep through a tidal wave. I sprayed and sprayed, and when he just rolled over, I unscrewed the top of the bottle and poured the water right down the back of his t-shirt. He finally woke up and stretched his arms out, still lying down on the floor. He gave me a slow grin, like he was used to being woken up this way.
"Morning,"
he said. Jeremiah might have been hard to wake up, but he was never a grouch when he finally did. "It's not morning. It's almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I let you guys sleep an extra half an hour, so you better be grateful," I snapped.
"I am,"
Jeremiah said, reaching his arm out for me to help him up. I grudgingly gave him my hand and helped heft him up. "Come on," I said. They followed me into the kitchen.
"What the?"
Conrad said, looking around the room at all his things. Jeremiah clapped his hands together, and then he held one hand up for a high five, which I gave him.
"You're amazing," he said.
Then he sniffed and spotted the greasy white McDonald's bag and lit up.
"Yes! Mickey D's cheeseburgers! I'd know that smell anywhere."
I smacked his hand away. "Not yet. There is a reward system in place here. Conrad studies, and then he gets food." Jeremiah frowned.
"What about me?"
"Conrad studies, and you get food." Conrad raised his eyebrows at me.
"A reward system, huh? What else do I get?"
I flushed. "Just the cheeseburgers." His eyes flickered over me appraisingly, like he was trying to decide whether or not he wanted to buy a coat. I could feel my cheeks heat up as he looked at me.
"As much as I like the sound of a reward system, I'm gonna pass,"
he said at last.
"What are you talking about?"
Jeremiah asked. Conrad shrugged.
"I study better on my own. I've got it covered. You guys can go."
Jeremiah shook his head in disgust.
"Just like always. You can't handle asking for help. Well, sucks to be you, 'cause we're staying." "What do you guys know about freshman psych?"
Conrad said, crossing his arms. Jeremiah sprang up.
"We'll figure it out."
He winked at me.
"Bells, can we eat first? I need grease."
I felt like I had won a prize. Like I was invincible. Reaching into the bag, I said, "One each, that's it." When Conrad's back was turned, as he was rummaging around the cupboard for Tabasco sauce, Jeremiah held his hand out for another high five. I slapped it silently, and we grinned at each other. Jeremiah and I were a good team, always had been. We ate our cheeseburgers in silence. As soon as we were done, I said, "How do you want to do this, Conrad?"
"Seeing as how I don't want to do this at all, I'll let you decide,"
he said. He had mustard on his lower lip. "Okay, then," I was prepared for this. "You'll read. I'll work on note cards for psych. Jeremiah will highlight."
"Jer doesn't know how to highlight,"
Conrad scoffed.
"Hey,"
Jeremiah said. Then turning to me, he said,
"He's right. I suck at highlighting. I just end up highlighting the whole page. I'll do note cards, and you highlight bills.
I ripped open a pack of index cards and handed them to Jeremiah. Incredibly enough, Conrad listened. He picked his psych textbook out of the stack of books, and he started to read. Sitting at the table, studying with his forehead creased, he looked like the old Conrad. The one who cared about things like exams and ironed shirts and being on time. The irony of all this was that Jeremiah had never been much of a student. He hated to study. He hated grades. Learning was, had always been, Conrad's thing. From the very start, he was the one with the chemistry set, thinking up experiments for us to do as his scientist's assistants. I remembered when he'd discovered the word absurd, and he went around saying it all the time. "That's absurd," he'd say. Or numbskull, his favorite insult. He said that a lot, too. The summer he was 10, he tried to work his way through the Encyclopedia Britannica. When we came back the next summer, he was at Q. I realized it suddenly. I missed him. All this time. When you got to the underneath of it, there it was. There it had always been. And even though he was sitting there only feet away, I missed him more than ever. Underneath my lashes, I watched him, and I thought, come back. Be the you I love and remember. Chapter 39. We were done with psychology, and Conrad was working on his English paper with his headphones on when my phone buzzed. It was Taylor. I wasn't sure if she was calling to apologize or to demand I bring her stuff back home immediately. Maybe a mixture of both? I turned off my phone. With all the house drama, I hadn't thought about our fight once. I'd only been back at the summer house for a couple of days, and just like always, I'd already forgotten about Taylor and everything back home. What mattered to me was here. It had always been that way. But those things she'd said, they hurt. Maybe they were true. But I didn't know if I could forgive her for saying them. It was getting dark out when Jeremiah leaned over and said in a low voice, "You know, if you wanted to, you could leave tonight. You could just take my car. I could pick it up tomorrow, after Conrad's done with his exams. We could hang out or something." "Oh, I'm not leaving yet. I want to go with you guys tomorrow."
"Are you sure?"
"Sure, I'm sure. Don't you want me to come with you?" It was starting to hurt my feelings, the way he was acting like they were imposing on me, as if we weren't family.
"Yeah, of course I do."
He paused like he was going to say something else. I poked him with my highlighter. "Are you scared that you'll get in trouble with Mara?" I was only halfway teasing. I still couldn't believe he hadn't told me he had a sort of girlfriend. I wasn't entirely sure why it mattered, but it did. We were supposed to be close, or at least we used to be. I should have known if he had a girlfriend or not. And how long had they been broken up anyway? She hadn't been at the funeral, or at least I didn't think so. It wasn't like Jeremiah had gone around introducing her to people. What kind of girlfriend didn't go to her boyfriend's mom's funeral? Even Conrad's ex had come. Jeremiah glanced over at Conrad and lowered his voice.
"I told you, Mara and I are done."
When I didn't say anything, he said,
"Come on, Belly, don't be mad."
"I can't believe you didn't tell me about her," I said, highlighting an entire paragraph. I didn't look at him. "I can't believe you kept it a secret."
"There wasn't anything to tell, I swear."
"Ha," I said. But I felt better. I snuck a peek at Jeremiah, and he looked back at me with anxious eyes.
"Okay?"
"Fine. It doesn't affect me one way or the other. I just thought you would have told me a thing like that." He relaxed back into his seat.
"We weren't that serious, trust me. She was just a girl. It wasn't like how it was with Conrad, and I started, and he broke off guiltily. It wasn't like how it was with Conrad and Aubrey. He'd loved her. Once upon a time, he'd been crazy about her. He had never been that way with me. Never. But I had loved him. I loved him longer and truer than I had anyone in my whole life, and I would probably never love anyone that way again. Which, to be honest, was almost a relief. Chapter 40, July 6th. When I woke up the next morning, the first thing I did was go to my window. Who knew how many more times I would see this view? We were all growing up. I would be at college soon. But the good thing, the comforting thing, was the knowing that it would still be here. The house wasn't going away. Looking out the window, it was impossible to see where the sky ended and the ocean began. I'd forgotten how foggy the mornings could get here. I stood there and tried to get my fill, tried to make the memory last. Then I ran over to Jeremiah's and Conrad's rooms, banging on doors. "Wake up! Let's get the show on the road!" I yelled, starting down the hall. I headed downstairs to get a glass of juice, and Conrad was sitting at the kitchen table, where he'd been when I went to sleep around 4 a.m. He was already dressed and making notes in a notebook. I started to back out of the kitchen, but he looked up. "Nice PJs," he said. I flushed. I was still wearing Taylor's stupid pajamas. Scowling, I said, "We're leaving in 20 minutes, so be ready." As I headed back upstairs, I heard Conrad say, "I already am." If he said he was ready, he was ready. He would pass those exams. He'd probably ace them. Conrad didn't fail at anything he set his mind to. An hour later, we were almost on our way. I was locking the glass sliding door on the porch when I heard Conrad say, "Should we?" I turned around, started to say, "Should we what?" when Jeremiah came out of nowhere. "Yeah, for old time's sake," Jeremiah said. "Uh-oh." "No way," I said. "No freaking way!" The next thing I knew, Jeremiah was grabbing my legs and Conrad took my arms, and together, they swung me back, then forth. Jeremiah yelled, "Belly flop!" And they flung me through the air, and as I landed in the pool, I thought, well, there. They're finally united on something. When I surfaced, I yelled, "Jerks!" It only made them laugh harder. I had to go back inside and change out of my soaked clothes, the clothes I wore the first day. I changed into Taylor's sundress and her platform sandals. As I wrung out my hair with a hand towel, it was hard to be mad. I even smiled to myself. Possibly the last belly flop of my life. And Stephen wasn't there to partake. It was Jeremiah's idea to take one car, so Conrad could keep studying on the way. Conrad didn't even try to take the front seat. He just went straight to the back and started flipping through his note cards. Predictably, I cried as we drove away. I was just glad I was up front and wearing sunglasses so the boys couldn't tease me about it. But I loved that house, and I hated to say goodbye, because it was more than just a house. It was every summer, every boat ride, every sunset. It was Susanna. We drove in near silence for a while, and then Britney Spears came on the radio, and I turned it up loud. It went without saying that Conrad hated Britney Spears, but I didn't care. I started to sing along, and Jeremiah did too. "Oh, baby, baby, I shouldn't have let you go," I sang, shimmying toward the dashboard. "Show me how you want it to be," Jeremiah sang back, bouncing his shoulders. When the song changed,
It was Justin Timberlake, and Jeremiah did an amazing Justin Timberlake. He was so unselfconscious and easy with who he was. He made me want to be like that, too. He sang to me, "And tell me how they got that pretty little face on the pretty little frame, girl." I put my hand on my heart and fake swooned for him, like a groupie. "Fast, fast, slow, whichever way you wanna run, girl." I backed him up at the chorus. "This just can't be summer love." From the back seat, Conrad growled, "Can you guys please turn the music down? I'm trying to study here, remember?" I turned around and said, "Oh, sorry, is it bothering you?" He looked at me with narrowed eyes. Without saying a word, Jeremiah turned the music down. We drove for another hour or so, and then he said, "Do you need to pee or anything? I'm going to stop at the next exit for gas." I shook my head. "No, but I am thirsty." We pulled into the gas station parking lot, and while Jeremiah filled the car up and Conrad napped, I ran into the convenience store. I got Jeremiah and me both Slurpees, half Coke and half cherry, a combination I had perfected over the years. When I got back to the car, I climbed in and handed Jeremiah his Slurpee. His whole face lit up. "Aw, thanks, Bells. What flavor did you get me?" "Drink it and see." He took a long sip and nodded appreciatively. "Half Coke, half cherry, your specialty. Nice." "Hey, remember that time?" I started to say.
"Yep," he said. "My dad still doesn't want anyone touching his blender."
I put my feet up on the dashboard and leaned back, sipping on my Slurpee. I thought to myself, happiness is a Slurpee and a hot pink straw. From the back, Conrad said irritably, "Where's mine?" "I thought you were still asleep," I said. "And you have to drink a Slurpee right away or it'll melt, so..." I didn't see the point. Conrad glared at me.
"Well, at least let me have a sip."
"But you hate Slurpees," which was true. Conrad didn't like sugary drinks. He never had.
"I don't care. I'm thirsty."
I handed him my cup and turned around and watched him drink. I was expecting him to make a face or something, but he just drank and handed it back. And then he said,
"I thought your specialty was cocoa."
I stared at him. Did he really just say that? Did he remember? The way he looked back at me, one eyebrow raised, I knew he did. And this time, I was the one to look away. Because I remembered. I remembered everything. Chapter 41. When Conrad left to take his exam, Jeremiah and I bought turkey and avocado sandwiches on whole wheat bread, and we ate them out on the lawn. I finished mine first. I was really hungry. When he was done, Jeremiah balled up the foil in his hand and threw it into the trash can. He sat back down next to me in the grass. Out of nowhere, he said to me,
"Why didn't you come see me after my mom died?"
I stuttered. I came to the funeral. Jeremiah's gaze on me was steady, unblinking.
"That's not what I mean.
I didn't think you'd want me there yet."
"No, it was because you didn't want to be there. I wanted you there."
He was right. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be anywhere near her house. Thinking about her made my heart hurt. It was too much. But the thought of Jeremiah waiting for me to call him, needing someone to talk to, that hurt so bad. "You're right," I told him. "I should have come." Jeremiah had been there for Conrad, for Susanna, for me. And who had been there for him? Nobody. I wanted him to know I was here now. He looked up at the sky.
"It's hard, you know, because I want to talk about her. But Conrad doesn't want to, and I can't talk to my dad, and you weren't there either. We all love her. And nobody can talk about her.
What do you want to say?" He leaned his head back, thinking,
That I miss her?
I really miss her. She's only been gone for 2 months, but it feels like longer. And it also feels like it just happened, like yesterday. I nodded. That was exactly how it felt. Do you think she'd be glad? He meant glad about Conrad, the way we'd helped him.
Yeah, me too.
Jeremiah hesitated.
So what now?
What do you mean?
I mean, are you going to come back this summer?
Well, sure, when my mom comes, I'll come too. He nodded.
Good. Because my dad was wrong, you know. It's your house, too, and Lore's and Steve's. It's all of ours.
Suddenly I was struck with the strangest sensation of wanting, needing to reach out and touch his cheek with the back of my hand. So he would know. So he would feel exactly how much those words meant to me. Because sometimes words were so pitifully inadequate, and I knew that, but I had to try anyway. I told him, thank you. That means a lot. He shrugged.
It's just the truth.
We saw him coming from far away, walking fast. We stood up and waited for him. Jeremiah said, does it look like good news to you? It looks like good news to me. It did to me, too. Conrad strode up to us, his eyes gleaming.
I killed it,
he said triumphantly. First time I'd seen him smile, really smile, joyful, carefree, since Susanna died. He and Jeremiah high-fived so hard the clap rang out in the air. And then Conrad smiled at me and whirled me around so fast I almost tripped. I was laughing. See? See? I told you. Conrad picked me up and threw me over his shoulder like I weighed nothing, just like he had the other night. I laughed as he ran, weaving left and right like he was on a football field. Put me down! I shrieked, yanking at the bottom of my dress. He did. He set me down on the ground gently.
Thanks,
he said, his hand still on my waist.
For coming.
Before I could tell him, you're welcome, Jeremiah walked over and said,
you still have one left, Con.
His voice was strained, and I straightened my dress. Conrad looked at his watch.
You're right. I'm gonna head over to the psychology department. This will be a quick one. I'll meet up with you guys in an hour or so.
As I watched him go, a million questions ran through my head. I felt dizzy, and not just from being spun around in the air. Abruptly, Jeremiah said,
I'm gonna go find a bathroom. I'll meet you at the car.
He fished his keys out of his pocket and threw them to me. Do you want me to wait? I asked. But he was already walking away. He didn't turn around.
No, just go ahead.
Instead of going straight to the car, I stopped at the student store. I bought a soda and a hoodie that said Brown in block letters. Even though it wasn't cold, I put it on. Jeremiah and I sat in the car, listening to the radio. It was starting to get dark. The windows were down, and I could hear a bird calling somewhere out there. Conrad would be done with his last exam soon.
Nice hoodie, by the way,
Jeremiah said. Thanks. I always wanted one from Brown. Jeremiah nodded.
I remember.
I fingered my necklace, twisting it around my pinky. I wonder... I let my sentence trail off, waiting for Jeremiah to prod me to ask me what it was I wondered about. But he didn't. He didn't ask me anything. He was silent. Sighing, I looked out the window and asked, does he ever talk about me? I mean, has he ever said anything?
Don't,
he snapped.
Don't what?
I turned toward him, confused.
Don't ask me that. Don't ask me about him.
Jeremiah spoke in a harsh, low voice, a tone he'd never used with me and one I didn't recall him using with anybody. A muscle in his jaw twitched furiously. I recoiled and sank back into my seat. I felt as though he had slapped me. What's the matter with you? He started to say something, maybe an apology and maybe not, and then he stopped. He leaned over and pulled me toward him, like by gravitational force.
He kissed me, hard, and his skin was stubbly and rough against my cheek. My first thought was, I guess he didn't have time to shave this morning. And then I was kissing him back, my fingers winding through his soft yellow hair, and my eyes closed. He kissed like he was drowning, and I was air. It was passionate and desperate and like nothing I had ever experienced before. This was what people meant when they said the earth stopped turning. It felt like a world outside of that car. That moment didn't exist. It was just us. When he backed away, his pupils were huge and unfocused. He blinked, and then he cleared his throat. "Belly," he said, and his voice was foggy. He didn't say anything else. Just my name. "Do you still care? Think about me? Want me?" I thought. Roughly, he said, "Yes. Yes, I still..." And then we were kissing again. He must have made some noise, because we both looked up at the same time. We sprang apart. There was Conrad, looking right at us. He had stopped short of the car. His face was white. He said,
"No, don't stop. I'm the one who's interrupting."
He turned jerkily and started off. Jeremiah and I stared at each other in silent horror. And then my hand was on the door handle, and I was on my feet. I didn't look back. I ran after him and called his name, but Conrad didn't turn around. I grabbed his arm, and he finally looked at me. And there was so much hate in his eyes, I winced. Even though, on some level, wasn't this what I wanted? To make his heart hurt the way he made mine. Or maybe to make him feel something for me other than pity or indifference. To make him feel something. Anything.
"So, you like Jeremiah now?"
He meant to sound sarcastic, cruel, and he did. But he also sounded pained. Like he cared about the answer. Which made me feel glad. And sad. I said, "I don't know. Does it matter to you if I do?" He stared at me. And then he leaned forward and touched the necklace around my neck. The one I'd been hiding under my shirt all day.
"If you like Jeremiah, why are you wearing my necklace?"
I wet my lips. "I found it when we were packing up your dorm room. It doesn't mean anything."
"You know what it means."
I shook my head. "I don't." But of course I did. I remembered when he'd explained the concept of infinity to me. Immeasurable. One moment stretching out to the next. He bought me that necklace. He knew what it meant.
"Then give it back."
He held his hand out, and I saw that it was shaking. "No," I said.
"It's not yours. I never gave it to you. You just took it."
That's when I finally got it. I finally understood. It wasn't the thought that counted. It was the actual execution that mattered. The showing up for somebody. The intent behind it wasn't enough. Not for me. Not anymore. It wasn't enough to know that deep down, he loved me. You had to actually say it to somebody. Show them that you cared. And he just didn't. Not enough. I could feel him waiting for me to argue, to protest, to plead. But I didn't do any of those things. I struggled for what felt like eternity trying to undo the clasp on the necklace around my neck, which was no surprise, considering the fact that my hands were shaking too. I finally got the chain free, and I handed it back to him. Surprise registered upon his face for the tiniest of moments, and then, like always, he was closed off again. Maybe I'd imagined it, that he'd cared. He stuffed the necklace into his pocket.
"Then leave,"
he said. When I didn't move, he said sharply,
"Go!"
I was a tree, rooted to the spot. My feet were frozen.
"Go to Jeremiah. He's the one who wants you,"
Conrad said.
"I don't. I never did."
And then I was stumbling,
running away. Chapter 42. I didn't go back to the car right away. All I had in front of me were impossible choices. How could I face Jeremiah after what just happened? After we kissed. After I went running after Conrad. My mind was spinning in a million different directions. I kept touching my lips. Then I touched my collarbone, where the necklace used to be. I wandered around campus, but after a while, I headed back to the car. What choice did I have? I couldn't just leave without telling anybody, and it wasn't like I had another way home. I guessed Conrad was thinking the same thing, because when I got back to the car, he was already there, sitting in the back seat with the window open. Jeremiah was sitting on the hood of the car.
"Hi," he said.
"Hey," I hesitated, unsure of what was next. For once, our ESP connection failed me because I had no idea what he was thinking. His face was unreadable. He slid off the car.
"Ready to go home?"
I nodded, and he threw me the keys.
"You drive,"
he said. In the car, Conrad ignored me completely. I didn't exist to him anymore, and despite everything I'd said, that made me want to die. I never should have come. None of us were speaking to one another. I'd lost them both. What would Susanna say if she saw the mess we were in now? She would have been so disappointed in me. I hadn't been a help at all. I'd only made things worse. Just when we thought everything was going to be okay, we all fell apart. I'd been driving for what felt like forever when it started to rain. It started out with fat little plops, and then it came down heavy, in hard sheets. "Can you see?" Jeremiah asked me. "Yeah," I lied. I could barely see 2 feet in front of me. The windshield wipers were swishing back and forth furiously. Traffic had been crawling along, and then it slowed, almost to a stop. There were police lights way up ahead.
"There must have been an accident," Jeremiah said.
We'd been sitting in traffic for over an hour when it started to hail. I looked at Conrad in the rear view, but his face was impassive. He might as well have been somewhere else. "Should we pull over?"
"Yeah, get off at the next exit and see if we can find a gas station," Jeremiah said,
glancing at the clock. It was 10:30. The rain didn't let up. We sat in the gas station parking lot for what felt like forever. The rain was loud, but we were so quiet that when my stomach growled, I was pretty sure they both heard. I coughed to cover up the noise. Jeremiah jumped out of the car and ran inside the gas station. When he ran back, his hair was dripping wet and matted. He tossed me a packet of peanut butter and cheese crackers without looking at me.
"There's a motel a few miles down," he said, wiping his forehead with the back of his arm. "Let's just wait it out," Conrad said.
It was the first time he'd spoken since we'd left.
"Dude, the highway's pretty much shut down. There's no point. I say we just crash for a few hours and leave in the morning."
Conrad didn't say anything. I didn't say anything because I was too busy eating the crackers. They were bright orange and salty and gritty, and I stuffed them into my mouth, one after the other. I didn't even offer one to either of them.
"Billy, what do you want to do?"
Jeremiah said it very politely, like I was his cousin from out of town, like his mouth hadn't been on mine just hours before. I swallowed my last cracker. "I don't care. Do whatever you want." By the time we got to the motel, it was midnight. I went to the bathroom to call my mother. I told her what had happened, and right away she said,
"I'm coming to get you."
Every part of me wanted to say, "Yes, please, come right this second." But she sounded so tired, and she'd already done so much, so instead I said, "No, it's fine, Mom."
"It's all right, Belly. It's not that far. It's okay, really. We'll leave early tomorrow morning."
She yawned.
"Is the motel in a safe area?"
"Yes." Even though I didn't know exactly where we were or if it constituted a safe area. But it seemed safe enough.
"Just go to sleep and get up first thing. Call me when you're on the road."
After we got off the phone, I leaned against the wall for a minute.
How did I end up here?
I changed into Taylor's pajamas and put my new hoodie on over them. I took my time brushing my teeth and taking out my contact lenses. I didn't care that the boys might be waiting to use the bathroom. I just wanted time alone, away from them. When I came back out, Jeremiah and Conrad were on the floor, on opposite sides of the bed. They each had a pillow and a blanket. You guys should take the bed, I said, even though I only partly meant it. There's two of you. I'll sleep on the floor. Conrad was busy ignoring me, but Jeremiah said,
Nah, you take it. You're the girl.
Under ordinary circumstances, I would have argued with him just for the principle of it. What did my being a girl have to do with whether or not I slept on the floor? I was a girl, not an invalid. But I didn't argue. I was too tired, and I did want the bed. I crawled onto the bed and got under the covers. Jeremiah set the alarm on his phone and shut off the lights. Nobody said goodnight or suggested we see if there was anything good on TV. I tried to fall asleep, but I couldn't. I tried to remember the last time the three of us had slept in the same room. I couldn't at first, but then I did. We'd pitched a tent on the beach, and I'd begged and begged to be included, and finally, my mother made them let me come. Me and Stephen and Jeremiah and Conrad. We played Uno for hours, and Stephen high-fived me when I won twice in a row. Suddenly, I missed my big brother so much I wanted to cry. Part of me thought that if Stephen had been there, things wouldn't have gotten this awful. Maybe none of this would have happened because I would still be chasing after the boys instead of being in the middle. But now everything had changed, and we could never go back to the way things used to be. I was lying in bed thinking about all of this when I heard Jeremiah snoring, which really annoyed me. He'd always been able to fall asleep at will as soon as his head hit the pillow. I guessed he wasn't losing any sleep over what had happened. I guessed I shouldn't either. I flipped over on my other side, facing away from Jeremiah. And then I heard Conrad say quietly,
Earlier, when I said I never wanted you, I didn't mean it.
My breath caught. I didn't know what to say or if I was even supposed to say anything. All I knew was, this was what I'd been waiting for. This exact moment. Exactly this. I opened my mouth to speak, and then he said it again.
I didn't mean it.
I held my breath, waiting to hear what he'd say next. All he said was,
Good night, Belly.
After that, of course, I couldn't sleep. My head was too full of things to think about. What did he mean? That he wanted to be, like, together? Me and him, for real? It was what I'd wanted my whole life. But then there was Jeremiah's face in the car, open and wanting and needing me. In that moment, I'd wanted and needed him, too, more than I had ever known. Had it always been there? But after tonight, I didn't even know if he wanted me anymore. Maybe it was too late. Then there was Conrad.
I didn't mean it.
I closed my eyes and heard him say those words again and again. His voice, traveling across the dark, it haunted me, and it thrilled me. So I lay there, barely breathing, going over every word. The boys were asleep, and every part of me was fully awake and alive. It was like a really amazing dream, and I was afraid to fall asleep because when I woke up, it would be gone. Chapter 43 July 7th. I woke up before Jeremiah's alarm went off. I took a shower, brushed my teeth, put on the same clothes as the day before. When I came out, Jeremiah was on the phone and Conrad was folding up his blanket. I waited for him to look at me. If he would just look at me, smile, say something, I would know what to do. But Conrad didn't look up. He put the blankets back in the closet, and then he put on his sneakers. He undid the laces and pulled them tighter. I kept waiting.
but he wouldn't look at me.
Hey, I said.
He finally raised his head.
Hey,
he said.
A friend of mine is coming to get me.
Why? I asked.
It's easier this way. He'll take me back to Cousin's so I can get my car and Jay can take you home.
Oh, I said. I was so surprised it took a moment for the disappointment, the utter disbelief, to register. We stood there, looking at each other, saying nothing. But it was the kind of nothing that meant everything. In his eyes, there was no trace of what had happened between us earlier, and I could feel something inside me break. So that was that. We were finally, finally over. I looked at him, and I felt so sad because this thought occurred to me. I will never look at you in the same way ever again. I'll never be that girl again. The girl who comes running back every time you push her away. The girl who loves you anyway. I couldn't even be mad at him because this was who he was. This was who he'd always been. He'd never lied about that. He gave and then he took away. I felt it in the pit of my stomach, the familiar ache, that lost, regretful feeling only he could give me. I never wanted to feel it again. Never. Ever. Maybe this was why I came. So I could really know. So I could say goodbye. I looked at him, and I thought, if I was very brave or very honest, I would tell him. I would say it, so he would know it, and I would know it, and I could never take it back. But I wasn't that brave or honest, so all I did was look at him. And I think he knew anyway. I release you. I evict you from my heart. Because if I don't do it now, I never will. I thought. I was the one to look away first. Jeremiah hung up the phone and asked Conrad,
"Is Dan on his way to come get you?"
"Yeah, I'm just gonna hang out here and wait for him."
Jeremiah looked at me then.
"What do you want to do?"
"I want to go with you," I said. I picked up my bag and Taylor's shoes. He stood up and took my bag off my shoulder.
"Then let's go."
To Conrad, he said, "See you at home." I wondered which home he meant, the summer house or their house, but I guessed it didn't really matter. "Bye, Conrad," I said. I walked out the door with Taylor's shoes in my hand, and I didn't bother to put them on either. I didn't look back, and right there, I felt it, the glow, the satisfaction of being the one who left first. As we walked through the parking lot, Jeremiah said,
"Maybe you should put your shoes on. You might cut your feet on something."
I shrugged. "They're Taylor's shoes," I said, as if that made sense. I added, "They're too small." He asked,
"Do you want to drive?"
I thought it over, and then I said, "No, that's okay. You drive."
"But you love to drive my car,"
he said, coming around to the passenger side and opening my door first. "I know, but today I just feel like riding shotgun."
"Do you want to get breakfast first?"
"No," I said. "I just want to go home." Soon we were on the road. I opened my window all the way down. I stuck my head out and let my hair fly everywhere. Just because. Stephen once told me that bugs and things get caught up in girls' hair when they ride with it hanging out the window. But I didn't care. I liked the way it felt. It felt free. Jeremiah looked over at me and said,
"You remind me of our old dog, Boogie. He used to love riding around with his head out the window."
He was still using his polite voice, distant. I said, "You haven't said anything about before." I glanced over at him. I could hear my heart thudding in my ears.
"What's left to say?"
"I don't know. A lot," I said.
"Belly,"
he started. Then he stopped and let out a breath, shaking his head.
"What?
What were you going to say?"
"Nothing,"
he said. Then I reached across, and I took his hand and laced my fingers around his.
It felt like the most right thing I'd done in a long time. I worried he'd let go, but he didn't. We held hands like that the whole rest of the way home. A couple of years later. When I used to picture forever, it was always with the same boy. In my dreams, my future was set, a sure thing. This wasn't the way I pictured it. Me, in a white dress in the pouring rain, running for the car. Him, running ahead of me and opening the passenger door. "Are you sure?" he asks me. "No," I say, getting in. The future is unclear, but it's still mine.
The End. You've been listening to It's Not Summer Without You by Jenny Han, narrated by Jessica L. Macy, and directed by Sarah Sarchin. This book is copyrighted 2010 by Jenny Han. This recording is copyrighted 2010 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.